Previously on Life's But a Song.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, go watch Muppet Haunted Mansion after this. Go watch Muppet Haunted Mansion. And in fact, we could do an episode because it's technically a musical. So,
okay.
Maybe we should do that.
Ooh, I'll add it to the list. I'm adding it to the list for Halloween.
Yes! Okay, I claim it.
Yes.
Life's But a Song, so you can sing along with a special guest or two.
Or two.
You like to sing and dance, and this podcast, by chance, explores musicals for you. Theme song, yeah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Life's But a Song, a podcast that likes to live in the land of musicals. I'm your host, John, and with me today are two very special besties of the pod, who I believe this is their first episode together, minus the birthday cabaret. It's Ariana Armand and Sierra Ryan, everyone. Woo!
Hi!
How y'all doing?
Or Sierra Armand and Ariana Ryan.
Oh!
Flippy flip.
You're being fancy now.
I am.
I'm good. And we're here today to talk about an episode that Ariana pitched during our Annie Live episode to talk about.
Because there's a connection.
Because there's a connection. Muppets Haunted Mansion from 2021. The screenplay is by Bill Beretta, Kirk R. Thatcher, and Kelly Younger. Music and lyrics by Ed Mitchell and Steve Murrell, except for Dancing in the Moonlight, but that's whatever. Directed by Kirk R. Thatcher, and according to IMDb, on Halloween night, Gonzo is challenged to spend one night in the Haunted Mansion. Now, I've never seen the movie The Haunted Mansion. I don't think I've ever ridden the ride of it. I know.
Apparently,
we need to take a trip.
I know.
Let's go now, Disney.
I know. Woo! There are a couple Haunted Mansion movies. There's one that was recent, that was live action, that was kind of cute. And then the other one was Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of, like in the early 2000s. That was a theatrical release.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
And everything. And I don't think it did well.
No.
It's a show in itself, except it's not a musical. Yeah. But there's no connection between any of the Haunted Mansion films. They're all standalone films, and they're all based on the ride in the park, but they're also their own kind of Haunted Mansion. There's kind of so I'm a very big Disney Haunted Mansion buff, like very, very up on like the history and all that stuff. So each Haunted Mansion film is based on one or both park, Disneyland, Disney World Haunted Mansions, but it's also just its own separate Haunted Mansion, separate entity.
Yeah. No universe connections besides to the idea, some common themes, some common characters, some common rooms, some common, you know, ghosts.
Because I know in this one, I'm looking at like the cast list on the Wikipedia page, and like for the Muppets that are playing themselves but also characters in the Haunted Mansion world, it's like Waldorf as Happy Haunt, or Beauregard as George Hightower. So it's interesting that like you have the human performing this right. Muppet playing this other character.
Right.
Is it like, are the characters that we see kind of true to like the franchise of the Haunted Mansions?
So they're what you see in the background with like the stretching room portraits and like the portraits on the walls and that sort of thing, those are very accurate to the Haunted Mansion rides, just with Muppet characters.
Oh, that's so cool.
Instead of like the human characters that are actually in the Haunted Mansion. Some of the Muppet ghost characters do like Fozzie is the Hatbox Ghost. The Hatbox Ghost has its whole other lore by itself. Again, we could probably do like a whole episode.
Right. And like I know I remember seeing Madame Pagoda.
Madame Leota is the character.
Leota. Pig Oda.
Which PS, it's fascinating that Kim, you know, the
Kim Irvine.
Woman, Kim Irvine, who is executive director of Imagineers or something like that, but her mom was the original Leota, right?
Yes. Yep. And Kim Irvine also provided the video for Madame Leota in the Nightmare Before Christmas overlay for Disneyland's Haunted Mansion, because she looks like her mother. Yeah, yes. So there's like a lot of,
and she has a little cameo as a maid, you know.
So I like that they because obviously it's Muppets, they love the cameos and everything. This movie has so many cameos,
so many random cameos,
a lot of random cameos. But I like that one was like a legacy cameo, and like they're paying respects to both the park and like the structure of Muppets and, you know, her job.
Yeah.
Kim's job. But yeah, so speaking of cameos, like the singing busts.
Pat Sajak.
Yeah, that was so funny.
What?
Pat Sajak, Justina Machado, Craig Robinson. And then there's Skye Jackson. I believe that's how you pronounce her name. She's a Disney Channel star. And then there's Jeff Cayley, who is a video game what do they call it? Journalist. Journalist.
I'm glad you did some of that research, because I was like, okay, I know Pat Sajak, and some of the other cameos of like, you know, the ghosts and such, but I was like, I don't know the rest of them, but they're very talented and very funny, you know.
Wonderful. Right. And then we get Alfonso Ribeiro, Edward Asner in his last role. Which,
cheers, raising glass to him.
Which part of me is like, it's kind of funny in a way. Yes.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a dick when I say it, but like the
he
fact that
a ghost.
He passed away and is playing a ghost in one of his last. Not his last, because apparently he filmed a bunch of stuff and is still has things coming out.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
This day.
Yeah.
So,
but it's the first posthumous project that got released.
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
And then we have Danny Trejo, which
he's in everything. He can cameo anytime.
He cameos a lot of Muppet.
He jumps into anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, this is his fourth time in a Muppet property. Third time playing a prisoner, and the last time he was on something, he was on like a cooking segment making tacos. So that's
cute.
That might be why that's his line at the end. And then my favorite is Sasheer Zamata as the ghost of Mary.
Is she SNL?
She's SNL, and she's currently in Agatha All Along as one of the witches.
Yes. Oh, she's fabulous. She's glamorous. Gorgeous.
So good.
So gorgeous.
And what's fascinating about, and then there's Chrissy Metz as well, playing the ghost of Harriet. So like, it's great that they picked people that they didn't really talk, these people, but like you saw their face and all of a sudden you're like, oh, Pat Sajak, okay.
Yeah. Or they go by quickly. Well, let's talk about the fact that this came out in 21, in the middle of a pandemic. It was a COVID lockdown, and it actually was filmed. So you got the sense of like not everyone was in the room at the same time, because everyone was shot and it was actually, this is the cool thing, it was not a green screen, it was shot in The Volume, which is an LED background, so it's a gigantic screen behind them that is not even projecting but is playing what the background is.
That makes sense,
it gives that kind of sense of it being performed live, and you can kind of react to things that are behind you in real life. This is what The Mandalorian was shot at, so you can get this one kind of depth of focus and play with that, and you can actually make it any time of day if you want to mess with your performance, you know, behind you. It's very interesting. Not quite it's CG, but it's kind of a real time CG
background. I want to play a quick game with both of you. How many days do you think it took to make this movie?
Oh my goodness. Like
to film it.
Film it?
Yeah.
like maybe a week. I don't think I don't really think it took that long.
I mean, it depends on people's schedules, like how whether it was off and on over like months and combined was like a week, or like how are we judging? Like,
so according to the Wikipedia page, filming took place in April 2021 during 18 days.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And you read that and you're like, okay. Because, I mean, the Muppets setup alone probably takes a long ass time.
Yeah.
And then you, I mean, Will Arnett, I think, is the only one that has like, or maybe, no, Taraji P. Henson probably has the longest film time of all of the humans.
With the Muppets, yeah.
Yeah. Which, by the way, her with Pepe.
I kind of wanted them to stay together. I think they could have had a nice relationship together.
Lauren and I like to, Lauren Gismondi, friend of the pod, and I like to talk about invisible scene partners, where like we did a movie, Cabin in the Sky, where like they're angels and devils, but like, and humans, but the humans can't see the other two entities. And so it made me think during this that like, she's performing to like felt on a stick, really, if you think
the tiniest, you think
about
little...
the construction of it, and she's delivering.
Yeah, I love her. I love her energy so much.
Is she so is her character not part of the rides, just original? No, for this
she is the attic bride, originally the attic bride, more recently has been named as Constance Hathaway. Originally in the ride, she was kind of just a figure that stood in the corner of the attic with like you could see the glowing beating heart, which is like really cool. Like that's actually like a reference to the earlier bride figures. Now she's an animated character. Like there's a static form, so it's kind of like Leota, where she's projected on, and she's got like this whole backstory about like being this kind of Black Widow bride who beheads her husbands.
That because of this, or
that happened years ago. And
she's
there,
the one
and
at the end going, hurry back.
She's also connected to the Hatbox Ghost, which is the character that Fozzie represents in this. So there's you know, the Hatbox Ghost is supposedly one of her former paramours.
That's why he lost his head. Okay.
That's why he lost his head.
Can I just say, while we're on the Hatbox Ghost, how wonderfully they designed Fozzie to look like the like London After Midnight character that Lon Chaney played. There's an old silent movie that is completely lost. There's only stills, and but there's a very distinctive look that Lon Chaney, it's not Junior, it's actually Senior, played, and they kind of melded his makeup and his big teeth and his googly eyes into the Hatbox character, which is really funny.
Just for this or also for the ride?
No, for the ride.
But it's more
it's a little more ghoulish
for Fozzie to have it, course. And so it just looks more like the Lon Chaney character, that the way that they did it.
Of course. I mean, and this is, I find this one fascinating because like Gonzo is the lead. You usually, when you think of Muppets, people think of Kermit and Miss Piggy and all that, but they are secondary characters to this. And I was reading that prior to this, Gonzo was always paired with Rizzo, the rat. But they fired
the Steve Whitmire drama, which is I'm sad. Still not over. Yeah, it's kind of a
why they fired him.
There's been a lot of discussion about it. Disney was saying that he was giving too much pushback over other when they did the Muppets. There's a Muppet TV series, like a Muppet late night show kind of thing that they were doing on Disney Plus.
The one with and, The Office? Like The Office?
Yeah, one. And Steve Whitmire was still Kermit during that. And Disney was saying that Steve was kind of pushing back too much. You know, this is not what Jim would have wanted. This is not...
Creative differences.
It was creative differences. He was trying to keep integrity of the characters. to, you know, where it was when Jim was alive. And there's also talk that, you know, Brian Henson was having personality conflicts with him. It's a lot of rumor and a lot of conjecture, but I think it just all kind of comes down to creative differences, and they decided it wasn't worth.
I was doing like a little cursory research on that, and I couldn't find a definitive.
Yeah, it's been kind of sketchy. It's a lot of, you know, he said, she said kind of stuff. Yeah. He had a blog up for a while, like right after it happened, and was talking about things. And I was following that. It just sounds like he thought the Muppets were being taken in the wrong direction. And of course, Disney did not agree. And possibly Brian Henson did not agree. The Henson family did not agree. And he just became more of a liability to them than an asset. I have my own opinions, and I have not warmed up to Matt Vogel at all as Kermit.
Unfortunately, there's a tenor energy to Kermit's voice that Matt hasn't really quite found in his register yet, and so you get kind of like a more laid back. I don't know. Let's just laid back.
Yeah,
low energy Kermit.
It's not as high. I was noticing when I was rewatching today. You know, Kermit. You watch like the old Muppet Show, and Kermit comes on. You know, like yay, and you know, the arms waving and stuff. He kind of does like a yay.
Yeah, and then
it's just,
and then
it's a third down below his regular what you're used to the voice.
What I did
like.
Find interesting though is the beginning of this movie with Kermit. I laughed my ass off when he's Piggy, but like
the costume switch. Yeah,
I like that they paid attention to like the detail of him having a nose on his nose, so he kind of sounds like this in the beginning.
Right, a little stuffed up. Yeah,
yeah. Which I was like, you know what? That's great. It's not the voice I'm used to as well. But like, you're playing with it, and obviously people can't be voices forever on properties like this. Yeah.
Right.
But they do have Dave Goals. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
The OG.
Playing all of his characters, and he's like the last one.
Yeah, I think he's the only one left that's still working regularly. I think some of the originals do pop in once in a while for things here and there, but for the most part, all the characters have been passed on to someone else.
Yeah.
So Dave somebody.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so like in the IMDb trivia, they were talking about like how the major thing at the end is that Gonzo has to get over his mortality fear, basically, or like his fear of being alone or not making his mark. And they made parallels to being like, well, Dave is the last one from the original.
I mean, yeah, I don't think quite that's the same thing. If I don't know, it's a little bit of a character stretch, I think.
Yeah, no, but it definitely was something that made sense for the character, for sure. Like, Gonzo's not afraid of anything. You know, shoot me out of a cannon.
I mean, is that
and what's relatable?
Canon,
you know,
that he likes horror and he's not afraid of anything. I'm not really that versed on the Muppets, I will.
Well, he's a daredevil.
Yeah, he's like based on Evel Knievel, especially in the original Muppet Show series.
Yeah, he will leap off a cliff, you know, singing the Star Spangled Banner and wearing a chicken outfit for the glory, you know.
Well, because when he talks about in the special the. Whatever we're calling this, about all the things he's done in the past, I like that you saw the clips of it, and I was like, oh right, he did get shot out of a cannon in the Muppet movie, the first one,
the Muppets, or the original television show. He was
I think
more than once.
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, that's his thing. But I know in one of the movies, like the earlier movies, you do see him get shot out of a cannon because that's his shtick, and we still don't know what he is.
Well, he's eventually an alien. They discover he's a weirdo.
Well, wait, alien. I'm sorry. I need to take a step back from everything. We keep saying he for Gonzo. I believe Gonzo is non-binary nowadays, or at least the Muppet Babies one. I remember there's a scene where Gonzo was wearing a dress, and then basically came out as non-binary.
I think that's in universe for the that Muppet Babies series, okay, which is not necessarily canon for the Muppets. I do think he's still referred to by male pronouns.
Okay. I just wanted to before somebody reaches out, because
as far as I'm aware, as far as adult Muppets,
he does still use male
pronouns. Yeah. It is still he him.
And I think he's referred to as a he all the way through this special. So that's what we're reacting to.
The Muppet Babies thing was, yeah, he wanted to be Cinderella, basically. I don't even know how I came across that episode, but somehow, because I never watched that, because it's not nearly as good as the original Muppet Babies. Okay.
But you know what? I saw a clip of that on like Reels or something, and it, like,
of course, yeah, someone pointed it out. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course it got such backlash, and it's like, well, I mean, the conversation is different these days, everyone. Yeah. So, and it's a creature with a hooked nose. Let them be whatever they want to be.
Exactly.
And like I said, he's always been referred to as a weirdo. That's a weirdo. Until they did the Muppets from Space, and he turned out to be some kind of alien. But his species, quote unquote, up to that time was weirdo.
Weirdo. So, yeah. Yep.
Or he would never answer, right? Like, that was also the joke, that they'd be like, "What are you?" And he'd be like, "The sky is gray today."
I don't know. I think there's flexibility in his identity.
Mm-hmm. What did we think of he and Pepe teaming up, though?
I like it.
It's the first time that I kind of warmed up to Pepe. Pepe has not been a character that I've really cared for.
Oh, I love Pepe.
This was like the first time I was like, okay, Pepe's kind of, I'm a big fan of Rizzo. So like, right, to see Gonzo paired with somebody else was a little bit, I get why, I understand, it's fine.
Pepe has a lot more to do in the very, very canceled show Muppets Tonight.
Yes.
And I love him in Muppets Tonight. He is awesome.
I liked him in Muppets Tonight. Yeah.
And
well,
he seems...
he's a good foil.
Some of his earlier appearances, I was just like, I don't get this character.
Yeah. Pepe seems a little sassier than Rizzo.
Oh, yeah.
Like, in his own way, of course. But in this one, obviously, he's the one that's making the meta commentary. And I was living for everything.
Yeah.
Like, at one point, when they were talking about relationships, and he's like, "Aren't you married to a chicken?"
Yeah, aren't you dating a chicken?
Dating a chicken. Yep.
Yeah, you want to talk.
So I know Muppets is like a family or family friendly entity, but like this movie, it's not for the younger kids.
Muppets were never meant to be for children. Prior to Sesame Street.
Nope.
Right.
You know, the
original first episode was called Sex and Violence. It was not for children. It was, I mean, I probably kids could watch it and kind of, I mean, sometimes I learned, you know, my first Gershwin song by watching a Muppets, you know, there's an education that happened with the Muppet show, but certainly it was not meant to, it was meant to tickle the adult funny bone, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the original Muppet movie, you know, the Electric Mayhem is clearly high.
Oh yeah,
Janice.
Like, yeah, Janice, yes, they're like, there is no, fuck, yeah, yeah, they are clearly, you know, doing things.
Stoners, yeah.
The Muppets are subversive. They're written in such a way that, for the most part, you can let your kids watch it. There's very little that a child is going to get, but you as the adult are going to go, oh
yeah,
you know, kids are not going to realize that the Electric Mayhem is stoned. That's right. They're just right. You know,
and in this move, in this little short, you know, movie, there's the magician that is the, you know, eventually we figured MacGuffin. Out, oh, it's the
Professor MacGuffin.
Is yeah. The great MacGuffin with his red herring Pee-wee.
Pee-wee.
Yeah. So you get MacGuffin and red herring, and anyone who understands those are in literary, you know, or storytelling clues, you're going to have audiences that are adult laughing at those jokes, you know, over the heads of their kids watching it.
The concept of the MacGuffin was created by Hitchcock.
Oh, yes.
I read about that. And it's supposed to be like this important thing that has nothing to do with the story itself. It's supposed to help just set up. So for this,
it just distracts the audience from something else, is the red herring too.
So in this case, the MacGuffin is Gonzo's going to the house where the great MacGuffin was, the end. And then, like, obviously they pay off at the end with him and that, oh my God, that fish puppet, I lost when it started talking.
Yeah. In his tiny little, that would be like a great Halloween costume, and just have the little fish as a little puppet that you can like control with a wire or something like that. That'd be fun.
That's one that I guess that's how they did it. Usually with the Muppet movies, like that we've done have done in the past here, there's always something that I'm like, I don't know how you did this. Mm. But with this one, it seemed pretty straightforward. We're like, in the Jim Henson movies, I should take a step back. Like the one that blows my mind is in Emmett Otter, when Emmett and Ma Otter are in a rowboat with actual water. And they're talking, and I don't know how they did that.
Some of them are remote animatronics, so that you would have something remotely, like by radio at that time. And sometimes was like Kermit sitting on a log underwater. Jim Henson was underwater.
In a barrel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like scrunched up and contorted. And
yeah.
If you watch Idea Man on Disney Plus. That's great. It shows footage of that. He was literally just like cramped up in this little barrel operating
with some sort of, you know, waterproof garbage bag, but with a hole so he can stick his hand up there
With this one, it didn't seem like there was, it felt a little rushed, the production of it.
Well, it's we're in the middle of a COVID.
I know we're
pandemic.
We're in,
I mean, what do you want?
We're in the pandemic and everything.
But there are a lot of hand and rod puppets. There's some Pepe seems like his hands are rods, and then his little mouth is probably just a tiny little string being pulled. And then there's my favorite. I love it when the ghosts are just the head and talking, and then two arms that are very floaty. The sheep ghosts. Those are very famous from the Muppet. The original television show, they would do that effect of the ghosties, just like classic ghosts. Not even, oh, we're just having humans and, you know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Puppets, you know,
and like, I know I one of the husbands, or one of the bride's husbands, ghost husbands, is like the newest Muppet that they introduced with the Jason Segel movie.
Walter.
The weirdo. The one
Walter. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but like,
oh, you mean that's the small one? There's also the weirdo from The Office one, that's like,
oh yeah, yeah, that's
no,
him
yeah, the, but no, Walter is the little teeny one, yeah,
the little
Walter's
one,
the,
yeah,
the husband, yeah,
yeah,
one of the husbands.
And then I was reading that they brought back Brian Henson to do Sal Manila, which I believe that
Sal Manila,
Sal Manila.
Is that the one that is the one marrying Pepe and the bride?
No, that's Deadly. Uncle Deadly. Sal Manila is the kind of Rat Pack character.
Because he has his monkey.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. He's based on a member of the Rat Pack. He's Sal Salminio from the Rat Pack.
Which that one they retired, but they brought back for this one.
Mm-hmm.
So this movie seems like it was just like, okay, let's make some fun. And I know that this has been like 20 years, 30 years in the making, because they wanted in the 90s, they wanted to do more holiday specials, and they do a lot of Christmas stuff, but they never did a Halloween. And so it just kept going back and forth. And then finally Disney was like, Haunted Mansion. Let's go.
Yeah. What puppets haven't, you know, fallen apart since then? I loved Sweetums was there. Yeah, the big bear, the security bear. There's a lot of wonderful, just random puppets that they brought back, puppets and Muppets and all those, you know.
And then obviously Bunsen and Beaker, mm-hmm. I think were newly constructed for this because they were the busts.
They're the busts.
But and everyone else, they were just like, let's throw a costume on you, different costume.
But then Stadler and Waldorf, in the dune buggy itself. Well, flying around in a dune buggy that breaks down
breakdown, yes.
Oh, so good. I mean, these are quotes from the ride itself. The fact that there's no flash photography pictures, please. The ghost don't so there's mm-hmm. all these quotes from the actual ride that obviously.
Yeah, I haven't ridden the ride. I picked up on some things like that where I was like, oh, clearly I didn't know that was the design of the dune buggy.
Yeah. Or dune, you can even see the speakers behind them as well. Yeah. The little speakers.
I didn't pay that much attention to it.
I loved the Muppetization of everything, especially the stretching room. Mm-hmm. I want those posters where it's Janice as the ballerina and, all these little, I just want every single one of those posters. And the sconces were the Menomina.
Yeah.
Menomina, guys. And then
the wallpaper,
the famous purple wallpaper was all Muppets. And I just want it all. I just want everything.
The one thing that I couldn't get over, but I understand that they were filming in that what was it called? Not green screen, Videodrome?
The volume.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the fact that Will Arnett's candelabra, the candles were really CG. Bad CGI.
Yeah.
I couldn't get over that though. I was just like, come on. I understand now that it was probably the confines of the room. They didn't want to burn it down, but
they wouldn't. The volume is huge. It's absolutely huge. I just don't think they want to just deal with puppets and fire. Yeah. Foam and fire do not match. Yeah.
So this movie has four songs in it, mm-hmm. where three of them are original. One of them is Dancing in the Moonlight. That happens twice in the film as part of the opening and then the end credits.
Dancing in the Moon,
performed by Dr. Teeth and Electric Mayhem. But the rest of them, I am kicking myself that it took me way too long to realize Life Hereafter was the theme song for the Muppet Show.
it's the one where it's in the ballroom itself. So the
Yes. Is
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a full swing song. Yeah.
Yeah. It's with all the ghost Muppets. So clearly this is one of the, this is probably the longest time that they had filming.
Yeah. I love that they threw in the lyric of a Memento Mori as a rhyme in there. That was really fun.
But towards the end of it, when they were doing some of the choreo from the Muppet Show, I was just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
This is like a
Be Our Guest Muppet Show mix.
Like the minor version of the Muppet Show theme. And then we have Rest in Peace, which Darren Criss randomly.
Oh, with the ghosts in the beginning.
Yeah. Which was brilliant because most of the epitaphs, there are quite a few of them in the Haunted Mansion queue. At both parks, Disneyland and Disney World. So it was a good way to like bring in something that Haunted Mansion fans are very into, the epitaphs on the gravestones in the graveyard. So it was a good way to showcase that without you having to read them,
Yeah, it was really cute.
So the busts in that song, are they part of the ride?
They are.
Do they also look like the busts in Hercules of the Muses?
No, they look like the act the singers who voiced them, Thurl Ravenscroft being the one that you'd recognize most likely of them. So yeah, they do a, you know,
because the way that they were lined up in the movie, it made me think of what's that song that Megara sings in Hercules?
I Won't Say I'm in Love.
Yes, where you have all the, because there's the one with its head cut off and it's on the side.
So that that is a nod to the Haunted Mansion busts.
Okay, yeah. But I was reading a little Herculean moment.
The Hercules busts are a callback to the Haunted Mansion busts.
Right.
The Haunted Mansion busts, that is how the Haunted Mansion busts are laid out. That is, the Hercules busts are a reference to the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, okay. I don't know what came first in this case, so that's why I was like, oh, Hercules.
It is a callback, but but Hercules is calling back to the Haunted Mansion, not vice versa.
That is
the
so cool. Disney doing its own callbacks to the parks.
That's what Disney loves to do, is those kinds of you know,
Easter egg moments.
Yeah, well, remember, like in the ballroom, the introduction of which is an amazing reveal in the ride where the dune buggy turns to the left and suddenly you see, but down below you, this beautiful dining room and ballroom and ghosts are floating around and waltzing with each other. And I loved in this movie that they brought back the classic Muppets TV, At the Dance.
At the Dance.
At the Dance sequence, which was just an excuse for bad pun jokes, very much jokes.
Yeah.
And they recreated it for these, like, and including the ghosts of Wayne and Wanda. the opera couple constantly come in and do their Jeanette McDonald and Nelson Eddy parody. So there's these wonderful, talk about like bringing back Muppets to play ghosts. Those are the type of Muppets that you know, they function for anyone who don't know who they are. They completely function because they're about to make a stupid joke. But to people who know who they are, it's like, oh yeah,
the little extra
guys.
Because they didn't last long in the Muppet Show.
And then there's Tie the Knot Tango, which is Taraji P. Henson's song, which, okay, so when we did Annie Live, Taraji P. Henson played Miss Hannigan, and that and in the episode, Ariana was saying Sierra should join us to do Haunted Mansion because it happened around the same time as Annie Live.
I guess so, yeah.
This movie came out like 2 months before the Annie Live happened.
Yeah.
And so I understand all you were saying now, Ariana, because
she had more chemistry with Pepe than she had with anybody in that Annie Live.
Maybe she learned a lot on Annie Live.
And so, well, she learned a lot.
No, Annie Live was after.
Oh, okay.
Was after this. And she learned a lot here to, because her singing was great.
Yeah.
The only thing I was confused about, that I don't know if it's also part of the lore or something, but like the weird jerkiness that her character had when she was doing magic.
That was specifically for this. That was that was something.
Okay.
Specifically,
that just took me out a little bit, because I'm just like,
the eyeballs,
I don't,
the glowy eyeballs and the magic,
the glowy eyeballs I understood, but like when she was just like shaking or something, I was like, whoa, is it me, am I imagining something?
I don't remember.
Herky jerky movement.
But
I don't know where else we should go with this. Is there anything else?
It's like a short little thing. It's like, you know, is it just over an hour or just under an hour? It's not that long.
Just under an hour.
Yeah.
It's like 50 something minutes.
It's a really tight script. It's a really, you know, and it's doesn't feel like it's too short, you know, like the story is told. And it's just,
I also laughed at the end, by the way, when when Gonzo gets eaten by the monster at the bottom of the stairs, but then he tickles it.
Then he gets spit out.
I'm like, what a way to go. Come on. Yeah. You get shot out of you now get shot out of a monster.
Hey.
Exactly.
Well.
The thing about this film is that it's the first thing that really felt like Muppets to me. Like a lot of their more, a lot of the newer films, you know, the Jason, I enjoyed the Jason Segel film. It wasn't, you know, I enjoyed yeah. Muppets Most Wanted to an extent. I liked the Muppets Tonight series, but this is the first project, like, since Disney's like really taken over the Muppets and like tried to make them a film entity again, that really felt like the Muppets to me.
There's a wonderful random quality, a zany quality that they inserted. I loved the screaming goat. Anytime the screaming goat came on and just screamed. I won't do my interpretation, but I can imitate that pretty nicely. And also the skeleton and the mummy going dun dun dun,
yeah,
dun, dun.
And then and at the wrong time, and then they missed their cue, and you know, the kind of feeling of that kind of random, we're doing a performance, we're throwing something up on the barn kind of feeling, and that to me is very Muppets. And of course all the bad death puns, single, you in your mind you went ba-dum-tsh, even though there wasn't that kind of feeling. That's also just, you know, Prawn But Not Forgotten was on in one of the cemetery things.
But some of the meta-ness of it, where they're like, we're doing a song now. Okay.
Yeah.
Or basically all of Pepe's lines.
Right. And like, remember Piggy's nephews going, being the Shining twins, like the pop culture references sometimes that just like random gig thrown in there. I really want to know from the writers, what was imagined but didn't make it onto the screen, because I'm sure that there's much
gotta
more.
Gotta be like another script's worth of material.
Yeah.
So the two of you knowing better of the Haunted Mansion lore, ride, and all that, do you think this was a good representation of that?
This
was more Muppets than Haunted Mansion?
No, it was very accurate. Even Piggy as Madame Pagoda, like that, her whole seance spiel is the spiel that's in the Haunted Mansion.
In the hallways, the doors, you know, the design of the doors, the design of the images, the hitchhiking ghosts at the very end, joining in the taxi, or the limousine. There's a lot of, and you know, like I said, the Rolf at the
organ.
Oh, I was so, I was like, hey, it's a gig, whatever. You know?
Right. It was very accurate to Haunted Mansion. Like, even though there were differences and there were, it's not like 100% a recreation of either of the main Haunted Mansion show buildings. It didn't feel like you were not in one of the Haunted Mansion rides.
Right.
Like, yes, they weren't, it wasn't exactly identical, but the important points were there: the stretching room, the portraits, the wallpaper, the breathing doors, you know,
the bride, the characters, the things
you know from the Haunted Mansion were all there. And even when they were like Muppetized, they were accurate.
Yeah. I think there's like a wonderful combination of like, okay, you're going to have Madame Leota, it's going to be Miss Piggy. Like, there's not really a question of that. But then there's also a feeling of like, okay, I have a collection of Muppets and I have a collection of other characters. Let's just pick two out of each bowl and see if it matches, or if it's the complete opposite. And that's where the humor lies, that kind of thing.
But like even thinking to put Statler and Waldorf in a Doom buggy.
Yeah.
This is not a ride, you know, this is supposedly like a thing that's happening, but you still got the Doom buggy in there and it made sense.
And they in the afterlife, they're still making fun of Fozzie.
Of course.
Yeah. I also, when Uncle Deadly came on screen, that I was like, finally, if there's one character in all of like the Muppets that is meant for a Halloween haunted villainous project, it's Uncle Deadly. He's like my favorite character, and I love him. And then the fact that he's like overseeing the wedding
is
perfect. Like, that's save him for the denouement, the absolute, like, you know, the action sequence of the ending. It was just like, that's perfect.
So then, minus the ghosts, how do you feel about the amount of humans in this?
I mean, eventually it was just Will Arnett, you know, in the middle section. And
it was Will Arnett and Taraji P. Henson, but then we also have Yvette Nicole Brown as the driver, which I love her from Community.
Yeah. Most of the humans were bookending, though. They were in the very beginning or the very end. And obviously they shot everything in one day for each of them. You know, and they lip synced to themselves and or recorded, went in and recorded the vocals and then lip synced to themselves. And that was it, you know.
I'm thinking of like Christmas Muppet Christmas Carol, where it's one human, but all of them are Muppets. And so
a lot of humans, Muppet Christmas Carol.
There's a lot of humans,
There's a lot of humans. Fred, his wife.
I'm just used to seeing Michael Caine, which by the way, this made me think a little bit of the Christmas Carol story because of how he had Gonzo's journey in that room where he had to face his fears and everything. Felt very much like, boy, what day is it today?
I'm okay. Can we just say the design of the aging and then almost decrepit and skeletal Gonzo was so distressing to me.
It was me too. It was very creepy.
Someone took a string and wrapped it around the foam of his nose and made it and put like skeleton hands on him. I'm like,
well, that's also where I was like, is this now for children still, or is this going to be a little scary for them?
I mean, I grew up on Dark Crystal, so a young person can.
The 80s were very different than the 2020s.
But that doesn't mean they don't have to be. you want to scare the kids a little bit. That was what Jim Henson actually wanted. Children, he said, should be scared. I think I've said that in another.
You can't protect them from everything. Right.
And if you scare them in a safe environment, like a TV show or a movie where they're with family and in a safe environment, they can feel fear but be safe on the other side, as opposed to having it right there in person and not be able to have processed it before. So
I also like speaking of the transformation of Gonzo, I liked how it was subtle at first, because there was a moment where you saw older Gonzo and then you saw present day Gonzo, and present day Gonzo had like little white feathers or something in his beard, and it wasn't like going from the Gonzo we know and love to like mummy Gonzo. They made
gradually
like four or five puppets in between. Muppets, excuse me, let me use the terminology here.
Yes.
But is there anything else we want to talk about before we get into Sharp and Flat?
The screaming goat. That kills me every time. The screaming goat.
I will also say that there's little textual jokes. Like if you notice on the limo, it said to die for.
Mm-hmm.
And then also in the front, I think, of the limo, it said, on Gonzo's plate, corruptible mortal. And on the and at the end, when we saw it, said D end. Like those kinds of things just make me just.
I also love that Pepe's tombstone said Pepper instead.
Yes.
We made a joke about that earlier.
Prawn, but not forgotten too, as well.
All right, let's get into Sharp and Flat, shall we?
Sharp Flat.
So this section, we're going to highlight some moments, whether or not we talked about it. If we liked it, it's sharp. And if we didn't like it or thought it could change, it's flat. I want to start with flats because I really only had two.
Okay.
And so one of them was the CGI, those goddamn flames did not. Like, it took me out a lot. So, and it was there. Like, when the Muppets were ghosts and everything, I understood that. I didn't realize watching it that it was not green screen. It was that other technology. So I'll give that a pass. But those goddamn candles.
Yeah. I mean, they added CG where they could, where they had to.
You know. And then my last flat is for the lack of songs. I wish there were more. I understand Gonzo is not the musician of the bunch, so it kind of makes sense that there aren't a lot of songs in a movie centered around him.
I'm sorry. You know, Gonzo saying, I'm going to go back there someday. Mm-hmm. He is a musician. He has,
right, but he's not like Dr. Teeth or Janet.
He can sing. Having him sing any sort of song in any of it would have been fine. I agree with you on the lack. Only having
four songs and one of them is the end credits song.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Oh, well.
But that's really it. I mean, this is a pretty solid movie I found watching it for the first time right before recording this.
I think my other flat that I would add to that, as much as I like him, in general, I think Will Arnett as the ghost host, part of him looked like he was looking off camera at his lines as opposed to looking at Pepe or looking at Gonzo. And I feel like, and there's like a certain, I feel like he wasn't quite at the same comedic level as everyone else.
Taraji P. Henson was looking at Pepe.
And she was full out another Muppet, you know, she was that kind of way.
She went the Tim Curry route. It seems like
yes. And but Will Arnett, I think the specificity of his comics, it could have been a little better. I don't know.
Ariana, did you have any flats?
I it's not really specific to this, it's just that I can't relate to Matt Vogel as Kermit. It just isn't. It was in the beginning and the end, and then like that whole, you know, that center section in the ballroom, and I just can't. He doesn't work for me. He's which is funny because I think he also does Ernie and you know some other, and I think he's like a very good match for that. So the fact that he doesn't match Kermit as well, just I can't get past it, and I'm sorry.
So
well, Piggy.
So
was, I have no idea who does Piggy.
It was someone else, but that was pretty good. That was pretty
good. Piggy's
Eric Jacobson does Miss Piggy in this.
Yeah.
He also does Fozzie, Sam, and Animal. Matt Vogel not only does Kermit, he does Floyd Pepper, Pops, Crazy Harry, Lou Zealand, Uncle Deadly, and Sweetums.
Yeah. See, and he doesn't pull me out for any of those characters.
For Deadly,
it's
he's
just
great. Yeah.
Kermit.
Yeah.
So is it that when he did Kermit as Kermit, or when he did Kermit as the...
No, when he does Kermit as Kermit, just like overall, not even in this film. Yeah.
I was about to make a devil's advocate point of like maybe when he's the host, he's because he was in this, he was more
playing
Kermit was more the host character than he was Kermit. And so I was gonna say maybe Matt Vogel affected his voice to sound different when he was the host.
No, he sounds like this everywhere. And like we said earlier, it's also like an energy thing. The energy is not right for the character. And it throws me because all the other characters he voices, I don't get pulled out. I don't go, oh, that's not Jim, or that's not Steve. You know, that's not what I'm used to. It's only Kermit.
Weird. Yeah. Okay, Sharps. So I sharped Kermit dressed as Miss Piggy because I laughed my ass off when that happened, when he showed up as that. I also sharped Taraji P. Henson. I sharped the meta-ness of the whole thing. I mean, I know that's also the Muppets shtick as of recent years, ? Because like when they first did the Muppet Show, they weren't, well, meta wasn't a term back then, but they weren't as...
But it was a show within a show already.
But it wasn't like them calling out things like they have in recent properties I've seen.
Where they're Deadpooling it, where they look at the camera and go, you know, make a comment about it. Yeah.
And then my last stripe, which I think the both of you can agree, the Screaming Goat.
The Screaming Goat.
The Scream. Yeah, no, the Scream. I don't know why, but that is.
That's not a, and that's not a new character so for much. This.
I don't remember him, but he might have been.
I think I've seen the Muppet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen the Muppet, but yeah, I don't know. I can't recall if it's ever been like the screaming goat like that. But okay. Yeah, something about that just like
so funny.
Yeah. I do remember what was that there was one moment in the hallway after the screaming goat by the way, there's the moment when they're walking from the lights go out in the hallway, or it's not the stretching room,
yeah, mm-hmm.
which is very much the ride where all the lights go out, and that's when the screaming goat screamed for the first time and appeared, and that's actually what I do sometimes when we're in the middle.
I do that,
and it freaks other people out because I'm right next to them, and it's a very naughty thing. But also, there was one line I wrote down where someone turns to the camera and goes, "Don't worry, folks, we're not going to be explaining all the jokes."
Yeah,
that's right after they come off the elevator.
So those are I love those little moments too.
Yeah, and the screaming goat that is something that people do on, and something I do on the ride. Because what happens is there's always my way out. You look up, you see the hung ghost host body. Yeah. The lights go out, and there is like and the thing like ka-chunks. And there is like a pre-recorded scream that's not.
It's far away.
It's not going to scare anybody. And if you've been on it as many times as I have, you know when to wait for the right moments. Like I kind of after that scream, but right before the lights come up, I apparently scared a group of Japanese exchange students one time, and their host mother had to tell me what a wonderful job I did because I scared the shit out of them.
Sierra, what are your sharps?
I loved all the little mini jokes. I loved I wrote down like, oh, the Wi-Fi is lousy, it's a total dead zone, and there's a tip, don't trust free cheese. I'm just like, okay, that's a good hey the tip, don't trust free cheese. I think that was a Madame Pagoda said that, and I loved the Electric Mayhem ghosties. The fact that they were floating around Piggy was just very funny. And you said, you heard the Hogshead guys, time to dematerialize. Those things just make me so happy in terms of the rhymes. Yeah, and the fact that the usually the dueling ghosts from the ballroom area are like, you see their ghosts draw a gun, and in this time they're whip out a pad of paper and like start scribbling. Those dumb jokes just are so classic. You can laugh at them in 1911 or 1970 or 2024. It's just classic jokey Muppet stuff.
Vaudevillian, yeah.
Yeah, it's all the vaudevillian kind of stuff, yeah.
Any other sharps?
I mean, I liked the Life Hereafter song. I think that would be something to pull out for a cabaret, a haunted, mansion.
Ooh.
Halloween cabaret kind of.
Well, tis spooky season, so.
It is. You need something
to give that some thought.
Yep. And then the fact that they just throw in penguins and chickens and just ghost
the vegetables as well at the party.
Vegetables, yes. Just
the screaming pumpkin.
Screaming pumpkin. Yeah. Those are the things.
Ariana, what are your sharps?
So the song In the Graveyard is a sharp for me because of the way they managed to bring in that aspect of the ride queue without having you like have to read the gravestones to give the, I just thought that was incredibly well done to show that, because that's such an important part of the whole Haunted Mansion experience, and just everything that they managed to do, every little thing they managed to take from the rides and make it work in the world of Muppets but still be completely recognized. Like you knew exactly what each, Bunsen and Beaker, like, those busts that they're the hollowed out busts that they look like they're following you, this whole thing.
I don't know them, but I
mean, you don't know them, but yeah, whatever. Yeah.
I understood that it's an Easter egg.
Yeah. So like all the Easter eggs that were very obvious what they were, but in a Muppet sense. I have to give a shout out to John Stamos because he's just...
Oh my God,
I was just about to talk and say that we miss John Stamos.
John Stamos is just, he's a treasure, okay? And again, you know,
Do you think that line about your breath, like was the plankton, was that seemed improvised? That seemed like
probably.
That the two of them just had fun.
And again, like Taraji P. Henson, I think, you know, this is why I had such a difficulty with her in the Annie Live, is because she was so good in this. And, you know, like I said, she had way more chemistry with Pepe than she had with anybody at Annie Live. And it just felt, you know, very well done. There's very little about this that's negative. It's just between everything that every single reference from the Haunted Mansion that they pull in and everything they keep going, and then everything Muppets that they pull in and they bring back, and it all fits, like taking, you know, the At the Dance segment from the Muppet Show and putting it into a Haunted Mansion film. If you didn't know what that segment was, if you've never seen the Muppet Show and you've never seen At the Dance, it doesn't feel like, well, why did they put this in here? This is so weird.
What's this doing?
Like,
here?
Like just because it's a reference from the Muppet Show,
it just felt like a Muppets thing.
Everything about this, everything about this, as far as like script wise, just really worked for me. And you know, bringing in Kim Irvine, and that's, you know, that's like a very meta.
Oh yeah, I'm
haunted Mansion. You know, Haunted Mansion deep dive, Haunted Mansion fan connection. So that they brought in so much. I feel like there's just a lot of deep dives from both the Haunted Mansion universe and the Muppet universe, and it all worked together, and they made it all into one cohesive, coherent thing.
What did we think about the time of this movie? Like 50 something minutes. Do we think that that was good? Do we want more?
Yeah.
Do we want less?
It didn't need anything more. I think the story was told in that time.
Like you said, a couple more songs.
There
was a couple places where it's like, oh, this is a lot of
book scenes.
Yeah, a lot of book scenes that could have had. We could have had a song at the, you know, at the wedding, as opposed to just the tie the knot tango, which was really cute. But
it will be your prom.
Yeah, I like that. but I would think that there might have been a finale song of some sort.
Sure.
Before you know, we all lip sync to the credits, which I think I actually wanted to also sharp the. I love behind the scenes credits. Mm-hmm. And to see Pat Sajak in a green screen shirt with his beautiful, beautifully made up face, you know, lip syncing. You know,
Craig Robinson with
I
feel so bad for him that they painted his hair, unless that was a wig. But they
it might have
the
been
paint all over
all
over them. I'm like, that's gonna take you forever to get out.
But I remember watching this in lockdown basically, and just feeling it, especially as a performer. I'm like, oh yay, art can still be made. You know,
yeah.
You know, there was this kind of like glorious, and we don't have to take it very seriously. We can kind of have this let's put on a show feeling, even if it's just one person at a time. We can still put them all together in one shot, you know, based on, you know, using everything. You know, and as Ariana knows from shooting a Hocus Pocus special and me editing from home, you know, that it's you have to think of every single shot as its own piece of the puzzle, and but when it comes together, it's just very glorious.
Would we add any of the songs to our lives playlists? I just wrote Dancing in the Moonlight. I thought that was a nice rendition of it. The other ones felt a little like you need the visuals, you know, you needed the dancing ghosts and everything. Mm-hmm.
I think Life Hereafter would work. I think the lyrics are smart and clever enough on their own.
Ariana, do you have any?
I agree with both of those. I maybe it's just the meta-ness of the Haunted Mansion, but the graveyard, the Darren Criss song, I just get a kick out of that. Mm-hmm. You
know? Which I was reading that's also like a play off of Be Our Guest.
There's a playoff of Be Our Guest in the at Life Here and
Life Hereafter. Okay,
yeah, like they actually say the line about the can't they interpolate they changed the line a little bit about the, we tell jokes, I do tricks with my fellow candlesticks. And, there's that line is in there, but a little twisted.
Ah, Disney. Quoting Disney.
Oh, Disney. Mm-hmm. And then quoting the Muppets in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, just the way that everything fit together with the deep dives from both universes.
It's great.
You can't do that with a lot of properties, I don't think.
No. Well, no.
It's a big.
It feels like the Muppets were built to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because like Sierra said earlier, it's a show within a show. Like the original concept is a show within a show. So obviously you're seeing things backstage, you're seeing things, and they are inanimate objects that people manipulate with their hands. So
yeah,
and make them come to life, make them breathe, make them hear and see and talk and sing
and have
dance.
Pepe get drunk off of spiders on grapes.
Yes.
But on that note, we're done with the episode.
Yay!
We did it. Yeah! What do y'all have to plug or promote? Let's start with Sierra.
I just recorded vocals for a SAG-AFTRA recorded musical podcast. I'm not quite sure when it's going to come out or if I can actually say it, but hopefully it'll be like a 5-part episode podcast for a project I've been a part of. And then in December, unless by the time I've recorded this I've booked something else, I'll be singing with Manhattan Holiday Carolers. So we'll be doing tight harmony a cappella in a bonnet and a hoop skirt performances. And if you want to hire us, we are for hire.
Yeah, hire them for your corporate holiday parties, everyone.
Yes.
Ariana, what do you have to plug or promote?
So I just at this time have my regular gig at the Stonewall Inn, which will be happening tonight.
Ooh.
And you're not gonna want to miss it because it is Halloween themed, and I will be doing the Ballad of Jane Doe from Ride the Cyclone. So if you haven't seen that, you may want to look that up.
By tonight, I mean the
21st. What's funny is the day that we're recording this, as soon as I hang up here, I'm calling an Uber and I have to run to Stonewall and do the Stonewall tonight because I was not thinking when I agreed to the time on this. That's on me.
Oh, boy.
And then the day that this drops, I will also be at the Stonewall Inn doing the Halloween show.
Oh, hi, everyone. Future John here. So I may have made a little bit of a mistake. I was coaching Ariana to say tonight because I thought this episode was coming out on October 21st. It is not, clearly. So you now have more time to get your patooties down to Stonewall Inn to hear her sing. Please do. She's great live, as we all know. All right, back to the episode.
There will also be a show in November. There will also be a show in December. And in December, much like Sierra, I will also be donning the caroling bonnet and skirt, and I will be singing with Old Town Carolers.
Rival caroling
companies.
One of these days, we're going to do like a parody of West Side Story, the gangs, and do like a caroling off.
You know,
carol off. That would be
I'm seeing more like Anchorman because there's so many companies that you'll all be coming in to different parts of Central Park and just singing different.
Exactly.
How do we coordinate this? Because now I
really also want to do like a parody documentary about caroling, the caroling genre. It'll be like a Waiting for Guffman.
I will be your soprano for that.
There we go.
I am in for that. Let's get Lauren in on this. And
there's so many.
I'll be somebody. I'll be the silent cameraman or something.
Okay, it sounds good.
And if you if you want to help fund this mockumentary for Sierra, you can, or you know, if you have other ideas for this, you can email me at buttersongpod@gmail.com. Also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Threads at buttersongpod. What did you think of the Muppet Haunted Mansion movie thing? Did you agree with everything we said? Do you have some other things that we didn't talk about, let us know. And if you want to be part of the next episode conversation, well, we're continuing on with spooky season, and we're going to be discussing The Happiness of the Katakuris, little Japanese movie for everyone. Sierra and Ariana, thank you so much for, this is your first time together. I loved it. We gotta do it some more. Maybe yes, we'll please. Get Lauren in, and it'll be true chaos in this.
Oh my god.
Absolute chaos.
And everyone, thank you for listening, and bye for now.
Special thanks to Aaron Troy for creating the pod's artwork, and to Nick Bombacino for composing the theme song and the jingles. A huge thank you to CastBox for hosting this podcast, and thank you again for tuning in to today's episode of Life's But a Song. Bye for now, everyone, and have a musical day.
And as the goat says...